I'm really excited about this week's episode. I've spoken previously about my excitement for it, but I haven't said what it's about, who it's about. You know now, obviously, you've seen the title of the episode. It's going to be about Miss Melanie B from the Spice Girls, aka Scary Spice, aka my favorite Spice Girl. So, I have, since the existence of the Spice Girls, been the biggest Spice Girl fan, and like, it's never wavered whatsoever. I'm just as big a fan now as I was when I was a kid. I was probably like somewhere between 10, 11, I think 12 when they were around first. And if you grew up in that era, you will know exactly the impact that the Spice Girls had. I don't think that anyone these days really could understand it. There was no other band, I think, that had had that sort of like impact mania around them. Probably, like, I know they always get compared to the Beatles and that kind of like Beatlemania thing. I obviously wasn't around then, I'm not quite that old, but it was always compared to that, and I've never really seen that type of hype since. Like, people kind of say it about other artists, but it's still not really the same. And I think kind of it being in the 90s as well is a major factor of that. So yeah, Mel B was always my favorite. I love them all, but she was like my girl. I think she was just so different to me, and like, she was just so gorgeous and so loud and in your face, and she had this like accent, this Leeds accent that I just love. She's this really husky voice, and I loved her style, and I just thought she was amazing. I still think she's amazing. And I actually in April got to meet her. Oh my god, I'm still kind of in shock about it, to be honest with you. I really I don't even think it's like sunk in. And like, guys, she was so nice. Now, I've met celebrities before, and you know, I've never had a bad experience with a celebrity. They've all actually, everyone that I've met have been lovely. I met Mel C also. I don't know if I spoke about that on here before. I probably did, I feel like, because I was probably so excited. I met Mel C a couple of years ago. She was so sweet, so lovely, so kind. But Mel B, like, I can't even explain it. Like, to meet my kind of childhood like hero and to have the interaction that I have with her is insane. So I'll explain a little bit about it. I met her at, so her book Brutally Honest was released a few years ago, and it just came out in paperback. So she was doing a whole book promo tour again for the book, because since that came out, and I'll speak about this obviously during the episode, since that book came out, the original release, she now works with Women's Aid, and I think it was just kind of another like campaign and like, you know, spreading awareness of domestic abuse and her story. So she was doing like book signings and the whole lot, and I didn't think that she was going to come here. And then I was at home in Ireland in February, and I was just scrolling, you know, through Instagram absentmindedly, as you do, and I see Barnes & Noble announce they're doing a book signing with Mel B. Well, I've never purchased a ticket for anything so fast in my life, and even as I was purchasing it, I was like, if I don't get a ticket for this, like, if they're sold out, and they had just made the post too, so I was really hopeful. But I got the ticket, and I didn't even check, like, you know, is it a photo op? Is it you get to meet her? Is it just like you get this signed book and she's doing a talk, whatever it was? And then I checked after, and it was like she'll sign your book and also do pictures, because a lot of times like they'll sign the book but there's no pictures allowed. But I was like, oh my god, I'm actually gonna get to meet her. Like, I couldn't believe it. And then on the day, I went and we were like in line for so long, and she was held up too, so she was a little bit late. And but it was such fun being in the line. I've met so many like friends through being fans of the Spice Girls. Like, I have several people now. I met a bunch of lovely people who are in line in front of me, who I've kept in touch with, really, really sweet. And it's always like a fun time just kind of reminiscing and talking about like how long you've been a fan for and like what, you know, your favorite Spice Girl is, your favorite songs, all the rest of it. So it was a fun time. And then got closer to the front of the line, and it was taking so long. We're all like, why is this taking so long? Because we were like on in line out on the street, like around the block, before we even got into the store. We'd been there for like well over an hour at that point. And when I actually got in there and realized, I was okay, this is why it's taking so long. I'm totally fine with the fact that I've had to wait. Because so in the upstairs part of the Barnes & Noble, they had a whole like curtained off section of the room. Excuse me. And they were taking like two people at a time. And they were in there for like a really long time. So like even when I was at the front, I was like waiting for a while to actually get in. But it was because the lady who worked there literally said to us that she, excuse me, I'm so sorry. I'm just gonna get a sip of water. Sorry about that. So she was like, no, Mel specified that she wanted to spend a little bit of time talking to her fans and people that have come here to get their books. And I was like, what? Like, I'm actually gonna get to speak to her too? So I get into the room, and so she's with the people that were in front of me. And I'm walking, so like as you walk in, she's kind of like to your left. So I'm walking straight down, giving my the security guard takes your like jacket, what bag, whatever. And I hear her voice, like her iconic Leeds accent, loud voice speaking before I turn and look at her. And then I just turn, and she's got like head to toe, of course, head to toe leopard print on. She's got the big hair. It was like, I think that just kind of made it even more so, because like she's so like known for her leopard print outfits and her iconic big hairdo. And like just hearing her voice, I got like chills, and I turned and looked at her and I was like, oh my god, like that's Mel B. Like I couldn't take it in. So she's speaking to the guy in front of me, and she's like talking to him forever, she's hugging him. I was like, she was just so lovely, and she was spending so much time with everyone. So I finally get up to her. So she's signing my book, first of all, and she looks up at me, she looks right in my eyes. It's like, hi Amanda, how are you? And like, it's such a genuine, like your friend is asking you how you are. And she was just chatting to me. I was kind of awkward at first because I was just like so gobsmacked, I think. And then she finished signing the book and she stood up, gave me the biggest bear hug, like the biggest hug. It was like, I cannot believe Mel B is hugging me right now. And it was like she squeezed me tight. It wasn't just like a little like, and I mean, for a celebrity to do that, like to actually give you a big genuine hug, was honestly like, I was really, really shocked by it. And then so we're posing for pictures and she's taking like a million pictures. She's chatting to me as she's doing it. She hears my accent is Irish. She's kind of making fun of my accent a little bit and like doing the little Irish, you know, the usual Irish things that people talk about, like leprechauns and all the rest of it. And then she's just chatting to me. She's looking right in my eyes. She keeps her arm around me. And then she's talking about how she was on. So if you're not Irish, you don't know what this is. The Late Late Show is like a late night talk show in Ireland. It's been running for like decades. And she had just been on it a couple weeks before. And she was on it with the actress Nicola Coughlan, who is Irish. You'll know her from Derry Girls and Bridgerton. And she was on it with her, and they were just so like funny together. And Nicola Coughlan is like a huge Spice Girls fan too. So she was talking to me about being on the show. She's like, oh, I was just in Ireland talking to me about the show. Like, we were just like friends having a conversation. Like, it was like so unbelievable. If I didn't have this on video, I think I wouldn't believe that it happened. It's already on my Instagram, but when I post the post for this podcast episode. I'm going to add the video to that also, if you want to see it. And yeah, and then she's talking about my accent, and she said, she was asking me, you know, how long I'd lived in the US and all of that, and I was like 12 years. She's like, oh, and you've never lost your accent, and don't lose it either. And that was just like really sick, because that's always been such a big thing to me about my accent, like I never wanted to lose it. And having her say that to me too, I was just like, yes, because she's still, her accent is still so strong, and she had lived here for years also. And yeah, and then I quickly kind of told her, you know, because I didn't want to hold up the line anymore. I told her about, you know, I thanked her for her advocacy work, and I told her I'd been through the same experience myself. I told her I was going to do a podcast episode of the book, and she thanked me. And yeah, it was just really like, honestly, it couldn't have been like more amazing. I couldn't have dreamt of having that experience meeting her. You know, I would have been so happy to just like get my book signed, say hi to her, take a picture, like, and done. I would have been just as happy to do that. But the fact that she spent so much time with me and really just wanted to like spend that time with people who had come to see her and support her, and like, it was just really, yeah, it was really amazing. I'm really happy that happened. That's super exciting moment for me. I now have met two of the five Spice Girls, so fingers crossed for the next three, because if I made all five, that would just be iconic, and all my life goals would have been made. So as for everything else, nothing major has been going on with me. I have just been like working and kind of living my life. I've been meeting like friends for lunch and just like hanging out and trying to get back. Like, I had a kind of a not so great beginning of the year, so it's nice to kind of get out and do things and get some fresh air. The weather's finally feeling like spring, heading into summertime weather in New York, even though as I speak right now there is a crazy thunderstorm rolling in. So if you do hear any noises in the back, rain and thunder, that is what it is, and I apologize for that. So that's kind of it really. I released a bonus episode that you may have heard last week about Cassie and P. Diddy and everything that's been going on with that. It's such a tough one, because, you know, in a way it's like, oh, finally, you know, people are seeing that this wasn't just like some bullshit story, like this really was happening. But it's also kind of disheartening, because it's like, why did it have to take a video being released of him beating a woman up for people to believe Cassie was speaking the truth? But I'm glad that these are all coming out now, these stories. I'm going to be releasing another bonus episode soon. I'm not sure if it'll be this week, possibly next week. Just depends on how much time I have work-wise and all of that. I'm going to try and do little bonus episodes as much as possible. Sometimes it's easier for me to do the little shorter kind of episodes in between, and the weeks where I just don't have the time to put the work into a full episode. So I'm hoping for that. Maybe every now and again I'll be able to do one if I don't get the time to do the full one. It's just really hard, as I've said before, with my schedule. I'm working a lot, but I try my best. That's all you can do. I just booked flights home to Ireland for July. I'm going to my cousin's wedding. My sister's going to be flying home from Australia, which is great because I haven't seen her in over a year. So that should be fun. It's only for a week. I wish it was longer. I just don't have the time to take off work, unfortunately. But I'm so really excited for it. And I've got some concerts coming up that I'm really excited about. So it's all kind of positive things so far. So I'm hoping I don't have as crazy a year this year as I did last year. I'm hoping for nice, calm, relaxing, fun times. Hopefully, fingers crossed. I feel like whenever I say that, that's when it all goes tits up. But anyways, we'll see. So That being said, let's get on with today's episode. What drives a woman to want to kill herself? Here was Melanie Brown, otherwise known as Mel B or Scary Spice, one-fifth of the best-selling British girl group The Spice Girls, at 39 years old, staring in a mirror in the bathroom of her rented house in London, shoving aspirins into her mouth. With every pill she inserts into her mouth, she asks herself, are you sure? 10, 20, 50, 100. It's December 2014. She's just come back from dinner with her husband, Stefan Belafonte. She's currently a judge in the X Factor UK. She should be happy with her glamorous lifestyle, but she wants out. She can't pretend she isn't in hell. Her whole life was a sham. She felt emotionally battered and was estranged from her whole family. She felt ugly and detested by the man who had once promised to love and protect her. A man who had a library of sex tapes from their 10-year marriage, which, as he well knew, could ruin her career and destroy her family. She wrote frantic notes for her eldest daughter, Phoenix. She knew it would be up to her to get her younger sisters, Angel and Madison, to Leeds, where they could all live with her mother. In her head, it was that simple. They could just start a new life without her. They would be better off without her and could finally be happy. 200 pills. As soon as she got to the last one, she knew she didn't want to die. She realised she was a mother. She could never leave her girls. She started to panic. Looking back now, she realises it was a cry for help. She was exhausted by years of emotional abuse, mind games, degradation, threats and sexual exploitation. She was drinking too much and had lost all of her self-respect. Stefan felt like he owned her. He controlled all aspects of her life. Little by little, he had completely taken over. He decided where she lived, who she saw, what her money was spent on, who looked after the kids. She felt she had to answer to him for everything. She had to account for every second of her day. He would tell her it was for her own good. Even when he was miles away in LA while she filmed in London, she could feel him everywhere. He would call to check on her. What was she eating? What was she wearing? Who was she with? If she was late home, there would be 15 missed calls from him. Even though he had been banned from the X Factor studios, he had apparently flown into a rage when he saw Melanie grab her co-star Cheryl Cole's behind and walk into her dressing room wearing next to nothing. His presence was felt everywhere. If she didn't answer his calls, he would phone her driver, her security and her hairdresser, screaming, "Where is she? Tell her to call me this minute." He would look through her bag and scroll through her phone, looking for evidence of bad behaviour. She would let the insults roll over her. He made her feel ugly and like a waste of space, like she was a whore and a terrible mother, that she was lucky to be married to him because no one else would put up with trash like her. So how had it gotten to this? I just want to say also, majority of this I took from her book, Brutally Honest. I have a link for that in the episode bio as usual. But I want to add that, so the way that she writes the book is how I imagine and how I know now, because, you know, we besties, she speaks. Like, she's very, like, all over the place, frantic. Like, she'll start one story in the middle of another story, in the middle of another story. Timelines are kind of skewed. It jumps around an awful lot. So I tried as much as I could to put it in order in some type of a timeline between, you know, figuring it out through the book and then also just by Googling, you know, dates and times of things that were publicized that had happened. So if it seems like things don't make sense, like, for example, like 1 minute, you know, she's talking about her 2 daughters and then the next story she's talking about her 3 daughters, and but in between you don't realize, wait, another daughter has been born. Like, it's kind of like frantic like that. So I tried to keep it together as much as I possibly could, so if it is a little all over the place, I apologize for that. It was just that I couldn't get it, you know, certain dates figured out and all the rest of it. So anyways, we will continue. So Melanie Brown was born in Leeds to a white mother and a black father. She has a younger sister, Danielle. She studied performing arts in 1994. She was chosen to be part of a group that would later become the Spice Girls.
In January 1998, while on tour with the girls, she met backup dancer Jimmy Gulzar. They started dating that March, and by May, they were engaged. Jimmy would go from hot to cold emotionally. He was serious and had his own rules that he lived by. He would always tell her to be quiet, to calm down and stop talking over people, to listen more. Sometimes it felt to her like being with her dad. He would tell her she needed to give people more space and to have more respect. She persuaded herself he was trying to make her a better person because he cared so much about her, that his criticisms were all well meant. He would confuse her by switching off emotionally and give her a cold stare like he didn't even like her. Mel had so much going on that she didn't realise her dear friend and band member, Jerry, was unhappy and was shocked when she left the group. This pushed Mel closer to Jimmy. Band member Mel C would tell her to stop buying Jimmy presents all the time. It was her way of warning her to be careful. Her friend Charlotte would raise her eyebrows every time she saw him with a heap of designer bags and Mel's American Express gold card. "He likes to shop, doesn't he, Melanie?" she'd say. But Mel just wanted him to be happy. "It's only money," she would say. Mel was more worried about other things. Everyone on tour knew she and Jimmy had a problem with their sex life because she would often confide in the other dancers and her fellow Spice Girls. While her sex drive was high, Jimmy would keep her at arm's length. It would make her crazy. Mel had also paid for her own engagement ring. Her mother was not impressed and wouldn't let it lie. She would tell him, "I think you're marrying my daughter for her money and I think you're gay." He was horrified and Mel was mortified. She was contemplating breaking up with him until she found out she was pregnant. She was determined to make it work. On the day of her wedding, Mel desperately wanted her father to tell her she didn't need to marry him. But instead, he told her it was too late now, that everyone was waiting. But something felt wrong. Throughout the day, Jimmy didn't even come near her. She wanted a sign that he was really in love with her. That night, he turned his back on her in bed and fell asleep. She tried to excuse it as him being exhausted from the long day. Her uncle Barry later told her that when Jimmy had come out of the bathroom earlier that night, he had said to him, "That's it now, I'm a rich man." Her uncle was trying to look out for her, but it completely broke her heart. She had ignored all of the warnings. At 4 a.m. in a hotel on the morning of Mel's 24th birthday, Jimmy threw a vase against the wall as Mel sobbed at him to go home as he shouted and cursed at her. His eyes were motionless and filled with absolute loathing as he roared at her. This is just the latest in a long line of fights marking their 16-month marriage. He was known as Jimmy Goldcard in the press, always being photographed on shopping trips laden down with designer bags. He spent money like water, as her father always said. Mel never challenged him about the money, but she did challenge him about smoking weed all day and not doing anything all day long. She also challenged him about refusing to have sex with her. He had always said he didn't want to have sex with a pregnant woman. He would push her away. Jimmy had always had a temper. He was even fined in 2002 for smacking a 3-year-old autistic boy who had pushed their daughter in a zoo. He would kick off at photographers who followed him and Mel around, but he had never hit her. She felt utterly miserable on her 24th birthday. All her confidence seemed to have leaked out of her. She felt unattractive and uncomfortable with her post-pregnancy body. Jim would make little comments about how she spoke or what she wore, and it chipped away at her self-esteem. In the middle of yet another row, when she was 7 months pregnant, she twisted away from him on the landing as he stormed off to their room. She lost her footing and fell down the stairs. He didn't even look back and she heard the bedroom door slam. She lay completely motionless, covering her belly and whispering, "Are you okay?" to her unborn child. She felt the baby kick. When she got up, she knew there was no way she was going to stay in the house with him a second longer. She called Mel C and went to stay with her. There was no way she was going to be treated like that. He was angry with the world and she didn't want him to ruin her life. She'd lost every ounce of respect, but she was going to wait until their child was born. She wanted to see if that would change things, but in her head she knew it was pretty much over. She later filed for divorce in December 2000 after he assaulted her sister Danielle by lifting her up by the throat and spitting in her face. In May 2006, Mel met a man who she still to this day says had the most momentous impact on her. That man was actor and comedian Eddie Murphy. Her friend Lisa, who was the wife of music producer Jimmy Jam, had been telling her that Eddie kept asking her to introduce him to Mel. She was flattered and intrigued and they arranged to meet at his house during a party he was having. He was the perfect gentleman and would look her right in the eyes when they spoke. She felt special around him, but he also lived in a completely different world to her. Having been famous most of his life, he had built himself his own private mansion where he could spend time with family and friends without having to leave. After a few weeks, he wanted Mel and Phoenix to move in with him, but she didn't want to give up her place. She felt his house was like a gilded cage and she was far too independent for that. Eddie was intrigued by her independence. He rarely left the house and he didn't want her to leave it either. She would say that she wanted to go out for coffee, but he would instead say that he could send someone to get that for her, to get whatever she wanted. After 2 months, she couldn't stand it anymore. When they found out she was pregnant in July, Eddie was ecstatic. He already had 7 kids and was very happy to have another to add to that. He had already been talking about getting married and was adamant he asked for her father's permission. Her father agreed, but there were issues between them also. Mel didn't always want to be in a house full of Eddie's friends. She'd ask if they could have a few evenings to themselves and he'd say to go and tell his assistant. This didn't make her popular with his friends who loved camping out there. It felt like nothing really was in her control. He always wanted to be in the driver's seat. He wanted to look after her, but after spending years on her own, she liked doing things her way. She started worrying about how it would work out. She suggested they buy a house where they could spend a few days a week as a family while also keeping their own houses for their independence. He thought that was a crazy idea. He refused to even talk about it. She started to question their relationship. She felt he was a father figure to her and that in his own sweet and generous way was as controlling as her own father was. She decided to go home to Leeds for a while to have a bit of distance to think. Eddie was shocked. She went outside to put her suitcases in the car, and when she went back to go inside and get Phoenix, who was locked inside having breakfast, the side door was also locked when she checked. She was furious and started screaming and banging on the windows for Eddie to open the door and let her get her child. After 10 minutes, one of the staff opened the door. There was no sign of Eddie. She got Phoenix and left, furious. When she got to the airport, Eddie was calling her, but she switched off her phone. When she got to her mother's house in Leeds, she informed her that Eddie had been on the phone to her for hours. He was in a terrible state and wanted her home. She had promised Eddie she would send Mel back to him. He had promised her mother that he would do all these big gestures if she would only come back, and her mother had fallen for every one of them. She was clearly on Eddie's side and thought Mel was being crazy. A day later, she felt like her head was clear enough to go back to him. What she didn't know was that as she was on the plane back, Eddie was on the red carpet to promote a movie, and when a reporter asked him if he was happy with Melanie as she was now having his child, he responded, "You're being presumptuous because we're not together anymore, and I don't know whose child that is until it comes out and has a blood test. You shouldn't jump to conclusions, sir." I remember this happening like it was yesterday and being so shocked that he would say something like that. Firstly, like, this man doesn't really speak in the media at all. He's not like that celebrity that's constantly out there. And then, like, to say something so, can you imagine having the father of your child, your apparent partner, say that they're not even sure if the child you're carrying is their child? Like, it's just so disgusting. So naturally, this had caused havoc in the media. It was completely out of character for Eddie to speak about his private life, and even more so to say something so nasty about his loved ones. She still to this day does not understand why he ever said that. Her friend Nicola said that he thought she wasn't coming back and no woman had ever treated him like that. As soon as he had spoken, Eddie panicked. He sent his security to get Mel from the airport, well aware that she would be met by a wall of photographers and not have a clue as to why. The first she knew of his comments came from these same photographers as they yelled it at her while she held Phoenix to her. She was sick, humiliated and confused. He called her and said he was caught off guard, didn't know what was going on with them and didn't know what to say. She was hurt and raging. She said she couldn't forgive him and was going to make him take a DNA test. She said she was leaving him. She had been made to look like a gold digger who had trapped a rich man. He never tried to contact her again, and when she tried to call, was told by his assistant, "Mr. Murphy has the message that you called." So I think even before he makes these comments, like, his behavior, like, how control, she even says herself that he was controlling, but she kind of says it in, like, in, you know, oh, in his own sweet kind way he was controlling. Like, no, like, you're controlling, that's it. And like, her friend Nicola said to her, you know, he's not used to a woman treating him that way. And I think again, it's just that, like,
And you know, whatever she says about him, saying that, you know, he's still the love of her life and all of that, like, for me, he's still trying to control her. He's still making it seem like she's beneath him. And I feel like that would only be worse had she actually married him. You know, it's that typical, like, rich man power thing, or of it's my way or the highway. And like, all of his marriages have not lasted for that long, even since then. And the man has like a million kids. It just feels like he's got this pattern. And you know, I for one am definitely glad that she did not stay with him, even though it kind of wasn't really her choice. But I think him realizing that he couldn't control her is the reason why he lashed out like that, knowing that she would get completely vilified. And people did turn against her 4 years after this. So, Stephen Brian Stansbury grew up on Pulaski Drive, one of the roughest streets of Point Pleasant, New Jersey. He had six siblings. His mother was white and a teacher, and his father Kenneth was a black man and known as the toughest man on the streets. He was a drug dealer, and Stephen said there was always drugs being consumed in their house. Kenneth was a boxer with a record of violence and abuse. At the age of 18, he was charged with trying to kill his own father. The charges were later dropped, but he would go on to have a record for domestic violence, assault, and threatening police. Stephen had been terrified of his father. He claimed he had been the favourite child due to his light blue eyes, but this meant he had to spend more time with his father, who would sometimes beat him for no reason. When he later told Mel these stories, she felt protective of him. And again, that is a pattern that you will see repeated again and again in these stories. That's similar to what happened to me in the beginning. I was getting all of these stories of, like, oh, my mom was really abusive to me growing up, yada yada yada, you want to protect them, take care of them, and all the rest of it. She knew there was damage behind the loud, confident exterior, and she thought she could help him by showing him how much she loved him and making them a family. Stefan changed his last name to Belafonte when he moved to Hollywood at 18 and became a movie producer. He'd been married for a short time and had a daughter named Giselle. He was charged with beating his ex-wife at their home during a drunken row, which he did not contest, although he would later say the admission came at a moment when he had been confused and distressed. He also had charges for burglary and theft, assaulting two men on a motorway, which was reduced to a vandalism charge after he agreed to pay for damage to their vehicle, and for killing a mallard with a brick outside of his home. Melanie had met Stefan a few times previously when she had been dating her ex, Max Beasley, an actor and musician. He had been one of those people you see on the fringes of Hollywood parties trying to blag their way in. He had once come up to her in an airport when she was 6 months pregnant with Angel and asked if he would talk to her because she would talk to him because he was trying to impress a group of Spice Girls fans. He told her to act like she really knew him so then one of them might have sex with him. So gross. She told him not to be disrespectful, but she also found it funny. She admired his cheekiness. She gave him her number. She knew he was a Hollywood player. She next heard from him when she was staying at a hotel with her mother, Phoenix, and newborn Angel. Her hormones were all over the place. She would go from being completely happy to desperately sad because this beautiful child didn't have her father. Her heart was broken as she was still in love with Eddie, but he was still too proud to pick up the phone. Stefan called her and said he'd like to come and see her and bring his daughter Giselle. He turned up the next day, immaculately dressed in designer gear with a Gucci belt and expensive shoes. He was super charming and told her she looked amazing, even though she was breastfeeding in her pajamas with no makeup on. His daughter was 4 and very cute and shy. Her mother instantly took a dislike to him, telling Mel, "There's something not right about him. He's a suavo," which was her mother's word for any guy who was smooth and slippery and untrustworthy. I like that word actually, and I feel like even reading it, I kind of know exactly what she means when she says it. Like, it's such a good word for him. Stefan stopped by over the next few days, always with Giselle in tow and a confident smile on his face. Eddie had just gotten engaged. Mel was humiliated with how quickly he had moved on. At least someone was trying to get her attention. Stefan made her feel like she was the center of his whole world. He didn't focus on anyone except her and Angel, but she realized later he was sucking up everything he heard and saw in the room. He clocked the tension between Mel and her mother. Mel was still upset that she had been on Eddie's side. He clocked that she was a traditionalist who was finding it difficult to have two kids by two different men, with one not even acknowledging her. He clocked every one of her weaknesses and wrapped them up in his charm. Her friend and assistant Janet said later that she always remembered him calling Angel his golden goose. He would walk in the room asking, "Where's my golden goose?" And this is a perfect example here of how they can sneak into your life. Like, and by far, like, this is all planned out. Like, he knew this was in the headlines. He knew he kind of knew Melanie a little bit. He knew she would be vulnerable. She just had a child. She's been embarrassed, humiliated in public. People are calling her a gold digger. So in he sweeps with the charm, making her feel like she's amazing and everything at her most down, vulnerable moment. And it works. And this is why they do it. And this is how they do it. And you see this pattern repeated again and again and again. So he asked Mel on a date and she agreed to only go for a walk in the gardens with the kids. Andrea, her mother, was horrified that he had already picked up Angel. She took Mel to make sure no one got any She told Mel to make sure no one got any pictures of her. Mel told her to stop being dramatic. As they were walking, Stefan stopped her suddenly and said, "I'm going to make you fall in love with me because you need a really good man." She didn't notice at the time, but the next day, a picture of them with Stefan holding Eddie Murphy's baby appeared in the press. Like, can you imagine how bad that looks? Like, she's got this newborn baby who the father is denying being this baby's father. And then she's already being pictured with this other man and he's holding her newborn child. And also, you know, looking at her probably like really intensely. Like, it just looks so bad. But that man knew exactly what he was doing. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had known the photographers were there and probably called the photographers also. So a few days later, they went out to a bar and on the way back to her room, he kissed her. Some part of her brain was telling her not to go there. She joked and said that was weird and a crap kiss. She could see he was annoyed, but he hid it well by laughing and making a joke. He wasn't going to be put off easily. And again, like, this is, you know, seeing that he was annoyed, it probably took everything in him to not, like, say something about that. But he knows it's still so early in the game that he's got to put on the, like, charmer face again and suck it up because he's still trying to reel her in. She was flattered by him but also intrigued. She initially didn't even find him attractive, but she had never been about looks. She thought he was smart, much smarter than her. She was fascinated by his confidence, his fearlessness. He seemed completely bulletproof. She watched the way he was with other people. If he wanted to charm them, he would zone in on something they wanted. He told her how much research he did on people when he had meetings with them. So see, there it is. He would get to know what they liked, which restaurants they frequented, the music they listened to, and where they worked previously, so he could find connections. And this is exactly for people who are not just abusers, but, like, you know, like, she called him in one of those, like, industry kind of wannabe people, those Hollywood wannabe people. Like, they'll find out everything about a person to, like, get their way into their lives. And then suck you dry of everything you can possibly give them. So gross. Mel knew a lot of what he said was bullshit, but he played her like a pro and talked about how she could turn everything she'd been through to her advantage with the music industry in America, saying all the things she wanted to hear. He knew this and that person. Then, if his sales pitch was getting too obvious, he would switch to flattery, saying, "You have the greatest laugh I've ever heard, the best behind," saying he knew a great nanny or could help her with the kids because he knew it was getting too much for her having her mother around. All the while, Mel thought she was the one in control. Little by little, she was relying on his opinion for everything. But her mother could see it. She begged her not to get with him, saying all he seemed interested in was fame and money. Mel was still in love with Eddie and hurt by his actions. She genuinely believed Stefan was a distraction. He knew when he met her that all she wanted was for someone to love her and be a father to her girls after the humiliating public breakup with Eddie. He gave her all of her wishes with promises of love, solidity, and loyalty. She liked that he was possessive of her, that he always wanted to know where she was going and what she was doing and who is whom. It made her feel wanted and owned. She laughed to her friends when 20 minutes into meeting them, she'd get a text from him and race back to see him, excited that he wanted her so much. And like, that's him, you know, throwing out little bits here and there to see like how much, you know, testing like how much she's kind of in his control now. So it's like, oh, I'll send a little text and try and get her to come back to me. And if she races back to me, it's like, yeah, boom, I got her. He convinced her that she was the most desired woman in the world. Her mother eventually went back to Leeds, and 2 months after she had first had him over to her hotel room, Stefan proposed. The very next day, they were married. 2 months! So Mel is obviously in a very, very vulnerable state. Like, you've just given birth, you're vulnerable anyway. And like, everything she's going through, and going through it publicly too. So she was just in a really bad position to, you know, have someone like this swoop in and give her all the charm and love that she's looking for right now. And again, like, it's so important, and that's why I think it's so important for particularly like celebrities and people of power to speak out about their experiences, because it just goes to show that it doesn't matter like how much money you have, how famous you are, all of that. Like, if you were gotten by these guys, you're gotten and that's it. Like, you're done, you know. You're in this abusive relationship before you even realize that you are. Standing in a Vegas chapel in a tank top and jeans, Mel felt reckless as she exchanged her vows, giddy from champagne and vodka. She had paid for the flights, the hotel, and even the wedding rings. She also bought an engagement ring for herself. They celebrated all night, but when Stefan passed out and refused to get home, Mel said to Janet that she wanted to get the marriage annulled. She'd made a mistake. But she changed her mind and thought she had to make it work. She couldn't be the woman who was married and divorced in a day when she was still the woman who was dumped while pregnant. When she called her parents and sister to tell them about the wedding, they were anything but happy about it. Even Phoenix wasn't happy. She missed Uncle Eddie. Stefan and everyone around her told her the kids don't like change and she would adjust. Within days of them coming back from Vegas, Stefan was now also her manager as well as her husband. It had never been officially discussed, it just simply happened. So again, he's now also controlling her career. Sorry guys, I completely lost my place. I'm so sorry. Okay, I'll get back to it. I'm also distracted because there is so much thunder and rain happening outside right now. I hope it's not coming through on this. Usually this room is kind of quiet, but I feel like it might be, so apologize if it is. Anyways, okay, continuing on. After their honeymoon, Mel gave him the keys to her Bentley, and within weeks he had a whole new wardrobe consisting of designer shirts and bags. He would say if he was going to be representing her, then he had to look the part. He bought Rolexes like regular people bought snacks. Mel just nodded. She was never going to argue with him about money. She had never been one for showing off material possessions. He was living like a king after moving from his one-bed apartment into Mel's gorgeous house on Mulholland Drive. He moved in his brother Jeremiah to work as their chauffeur so they could go out to clubs and mingle with all the celebrities Stefan wanted to meet. She hated this as she had never been a networker and always been very private. He would push her in the back, urging her to go up and speak to them. Mel hated this, and she could clearly see that these people didn't like him. Jeremiah didn't seem to be like Stefan, and would even say years later in interviews that he had witnessed Stefan be abusive to Mel. Stefan would go on to rule the house by clever, manipulative domestic terrorism. It was the way he had been brought up and the only way he knew. Some examples of his abuse were saying, "Look at your arms, they look flabby and saggy. You're old and you're ugly. Get your face out of my sight. Your ass is fucking disgusting." He would get louder and louder, pushing his face right in front of hers to tell her how stupid and ugly she was. "You should thank God you have me, because no one else would want you." When they were out, he would constantly check out other girls. He would leer at girls crossing the street. It would make Mel feel as if she wasn't good enough. She felt she repulsed him. "Now she's a real fuckable bitch," he would say as he looked at Mel, while minutes later he would be shouting at her to have sex with him, telling her she was his princess and his queen, how he loved her so much and he couldn't live without her. He would tell her she looked stressed and needed to wind down, bringing her a bottle of vodka to drink, while an hour later he would scream that she was a drunk, disgusting bitch who looked like a derelict. If she ever got upset or started to question him, he would take her to their bedroom and tell her he was addicted to her body. They'd have unbelievable sex, and she would then think he really does love me and want the best for me. She would tell herself, as he always told her, that he was a ghetto kid from the rough streets of New Jersey. He checked all of her emails and even answered or deleted them. The same with her phone messages, Twitter and Instagram pages. He controlled all her bank accounts and work schedule. Mel would tell herself that it was just his insecurities, that he had a damaged background, that she hadn't given him enough attention, that he didn't mean what he said. But her head was scrambled. She would pretend it didn't bother her and even shout back. She was sure she could get him help. She felt like she was strong enough to deal with him. She was not going to let anyone know that she had gotten herself in too deep. He was constantly telling Mel what she could do or how completely shit she was. He would tell her she was bad with money while taking her credit cards. He would tell her she was a washed-up has-been Spice Girl with two kids by two different men, that she was lucky to have him now to sort her out. If she ever looked upset, he'd say, "I knew you'd act like that. Don't be an idiot. I'm telling you this because it's what people think and I care about you. They think you fucked Eddie and got pregnant for his money. They think you were low-rent scum. You have to know the truth." So he's attacking like her most vulnerable side at this point. He pulled no punches. He didn't sugarcoat anything. He said exactly what he thought when he thought it. He never stopped talking about setting up meetings, telling her she should be doing this and that deal, who she should be hanging out with, which restaurants to go to, what dishes to order, and celebrities to hang out with. He was all about being seen in the right places and with the right accessories. She thought he was pure Hollywood, someone smart enough to know exactly what you should be doing to be seen. She found it entertaining that he knew which Birkin bags which celebrity was carrying or which stylist they were using. But the constant jabs at her were starting to get to her. Initially, she found it refreshing as she hated when people would bullshit her just because she was famous. He would tell her things like not to wear certain outfits she had on because she looked like a mess. She had always worn whatever she wanted, and that had been a huge part of the Spice Girls and why people loved them. He would tell her style was disgusting. There was a particular tone he would use, which she now thinks was contempt. He would go through her closet and throw out anything he didn't like when she wasn't home. He would pull up images of people like Jennifer Lopez and Kate Beckinsale looking groomed and glamorous and say, "Dress to impress." It was his idea for her to do Dancing with the Stars, even though it wasn't long after Angel was born and out of her comfort zone, and she had also been in talks with the Spice Girls about a reunion. But Stefan told her it was one of the biggest shows on TV and she had to stop hiding herself after the Elliot drama. When people think you were a scumbag, you get out there and show them what you can do. She was adamant she wouldn't do it. She kept thinking how they would all hate her. She'd been humiliated publicly and still was carrying baby weight. But in the end, going on the show turned out to be a brilliant decision because it put her back in the map. People saw who she was behind the headlines. In her mind, Stefan had made that happen, so she now thought, oh, he really knows what he's doing. He knows what's best for me. It made her think he was some kind of business genius. Suddenly, everything was coming together in her life. There was one incident she recalls at the time where she was in the car with her father, Stefan, and her dance partner. For some reason, the stage entrance was blocked off and the show's security said they would have to walk across the car park, which Mel was fine with, but Stefan was not. He yelled and swore at the security guy. Her father was so shocked. He kept staring at her in disbelief. He later phoned her mother to say, "He seems crazy. How could she be with him?" She told him to try and talk some sense into Mel because she wouldn't listen to her. They lived in 5 different houses over the years they were married and they had arranged each one over different levels. They would always be on the top floor while the kids would be on the basement level with at least one floor in between them. This was to spare them from the abuse. Her therapist, Dr. Sophie, would tell her she had 2 modes of dealing with Stefan. Mostly, she would say very little and just nod and that would worry him. But sometimes she would go right back at him and challenge him and that terrified him. He always wondered where it would end. I completely get that because I would go through phases of either I would just sit there, not really say anything, just kind of nod and agree along and just like try and go with it and hope that nothing too hard would come at me. But then I had other times where I would just snap and I would give everything right back to him, lash out and all the rest of it. And they were the times that I probably hated the most, because I hated stooping to his level. And he would get so much enjoyment. Like, his face would light up when he saw me get angry and like hurl abuse at him. And it was because then, you know, he's thinking, oh, now I got her, now I can throw this back at her and gaslight her and say, well, you said this to me, instead of it just being him hurling abuse at me all the time, you know. Mel had picked up a lot of Stefan's tricks and ways of speaking. She would sometimes speak with relentless aggression, especially when she'd been drinking. She'd shout, no one likes you and you know it, they think you're scum. She would see him flinch and so would carry on telling him what she thought until he would then start firing insults at her. But Phoenix would hear her crying. She would stand at the bottom of the stairs and listen to them fighting. Then listen to Mel crying after Stefan had left. A few months after they had married, Mel woke up with a shock. The night before, her and Stefan had had a threesome with another woman and it had been videoed. In her mind, she remembered him smiling at her, but something in his smile didn't feel right. What if the video got leaked? What had she done? Her head was spinning and she couldn't get rid of this horrible feeling all day long. She had wanted to be everything to Stefan and make all his dreams and fantasies come true, including his sexual fantasies. The threesome had been her idea, but he had of course been well up for it as long as there were no other men involved. This suited Mel fine, as she loved women and had previously had a 5-year relationship with a woman. Sexually, Stefan was her match. He made her feel completely desired. Threesomes were always pre-arranged with women they knew, lap dancers they'd come across, or one of the many LA party girls. Stefan was desperate for her to entice other celebrities into their sex games. In the very early days, it had been fun. They had similar taste. She would have to feel comfortable with them first, and then she would invite them back to their hotel room. Unbeknown to her at the time, Stefan already knew a lot of these women already. Sometimes they would invite people to their house. It was a game she had grown tired of, and she wanted it to stop. He didn't. Then things would get nasty, and she would give in. She grew close to several of the women and they told her after that they were glad she had left him. In 2007, a Spice Girls reunion tour was announced. She was so happy to be reunited with the girls, but didn't want them thinking life was anything but perfect for her. She had always hated people feeling sorry for her. Mel felt amazing on stage, especially now she was toned and fit after training for Dancing with the Stars. She felt completely free, but she could feel Stefan watching her every move on stage. Some journalist friends of hers years later said that they had been freaked out by Stefan walking back and forth in front of them, slamming his right fist into his left palm as she performed a part of the act they did every night, where she would grab a male audience member and bring him on stage. Throughout the rest of the show, he didn't even watch and kept making calls on his phone. The tour itself was a great success, and backstage they all slotted back into their usual roles with each other. In these moments, Mel could forget Stefan. He would call endlessly, but it was easy for her to just say she was in hair and makeup or about to go on TV. If he wasn't there, there wasn't anything he could do and she could just be Mel B again. She could be carefree and excited. The introduction between Stefan and the other Spice Girls hadn't gone well. She remembers two occasions really well. The first was a photo shoot. Everyone had been polite and smiling and even given him hugs, but within a matter of minutes he had started into his wheeler dealer mode. She could see Jerry thinking, who is this idiot? Emma did a lot of picking up the phone when he came near. Mel C did, however, spend a lot of time talking to him, not that he appreciated it, as whenever Victoria went past, he would jump up, even if Mel C was mid-sentence. He seemed obsessed with getting her to talk to him while she avoided eye contact. Mel was cringing and angry with him for being such a jerk. The spiel she had been so impressed with in LA didn't translate to British ears. He sounded crass as he made inappropriate jokes and talked about sex. Mel would laugh every now and again to break the embarrassing silence, but she was also secretly raging that the girls were judging him. So she would show off her new designer bag, saying he had bought it for her, even though it had been with Mel's money. She would say she had never had better sex with anyone. David Beckham, Victoria's husband, turned up at one point with their sons. Stefan had his eyes fixed on him. He had been badgering Mel to introduce them for months. He would say, "Get Beckham to meet up with us," every time she was going to talk to Victoria. He really wanted them to go out on their own with the couple. She would tell him week after week that they were busy, but really she didn't want to put them through a night with Stefan.
At one point, David went to the kitchen to make some food for his sons, and they left them to it, knowing he would want some space with his boys. But she cringed as she saw Stefan immediately barge into the kitchen, just following David around, being loud, telling jokes, trying to get him to go out in the town with him. She could clearly see he was pissing David off. David later told Andrea, Mel's mother, that he knew he was bad news the moment he met him. But Stefan wouldn't take the hint. Mel was humiliated as she saw one of the assistants suggest to him to give David a moment with his boys. She didn't want to look at Stefan, knowing he would be seething at her for not making it okay. I totally understand this too. Like, there would be so many times with my ex where, like, whether it be talking to strangers or, like, you know, talking to, like, the bank teller or, like, someone at the bar or someone at the store or whatever it was. And, like, he would just go on and on and on. And it was always, like, bragging and stuff like that. It was just, it used to just make me cringe. And I could tell always by the people that he would be speaking to that they just did not buy what he was saying. They thought he was full of shit. They didn't want to continue the conversation. They were trying to get away, but he would never want to end the conversation if he felt like he was kind of in ownership of the conversation and like it was all about him and how great he was. Oh, it just, it cringes me out even thinking about it, honestly. Jerry told Mel later that she always remembers him having Mel do lots of club appearances at the time to make more money and ensure she couldn't spend her downtime with the girls. And again, this is about him isolating her from her friends. She was trying to make out like she was having the best time, but she hadn't been fooling anyone. As much as she could, she would try to make sure Stefan wasn't with them as they flew around Europe, but he desperately wanted to be a part of the team, and it was hard for her to come up with reasons for him not to be there. She recalls the second time being in a restaurant in London with the girls and their partners and Simon Fuller when Stefan kicked off at the waiter, making a scene over nothing. Simon had to ask her to get him out of there. Jerry also remembers a moment where Mel almost blew her cover. They were due to do a meet and greet before their Canadian show, but Mel still hadn't shown up 15 minutes into it. They were calling her phone with no response until Jerry went looking for her. She walked into her dressing room and shouted for her, but there was no answer. Then she found her in the shower, naked, in the fetal position, just sobbing. She got in the shower and put her arms around her, saying, "Melanie, it'll be okay." But she just carried on crying. She helped her get dressed, thinking they would just get to the meet and greet and talk later. They went and she chatted to everyone, smiling and acting like nothing was wrong. Then after the show, Jerry gently tried to talk about it, but she had put her walls back up and she could see there was no way she was going to discuss it. She later said on the whole tour they could feel that Mel was distant. In the end, the tour was cut short by 3 months. They stated publicly that it was family and commitment reasons, but the real reason was Mel could not take it anymore. The tension was getting too much. There was so much talk about Stefan trying to take over his manager and how the team didn't like him being around. They could see how she changed when she was around him, but Mel still felt angry and protective of Stefan. By this point, the press had dug up stories on Stefan's past. Mel had never known about any of it. His ex and mother of Giselle, Nicole Contreras, had done an interview talking about how abusive he had been to her. She described how he had pinned her against a wall and thrust his arm across her neck to choke her. He grabbed her by the arms and pushed her against the wall. His hands were digging in and really hurt. He was inches from her face, screaming at her. She was frightened and begged him to stop. She managed to get away and call 911. She described him as evil and said he would fly into jealous rages. He cheated on her with at least 12 women, and she said there was no lid to his fury. He threw her phone against a wall and would go crazy if he thought she had any contact with a guy, while also criticising her looks. He would call her all kinds of names, and even called her fat when she was pregnant with their daughter. He was even aggressive with her family and friends, and would intimidate people. She feared that she would end up in hospital. He was abusive, controlling, and manipulative. Looking at it now, Mel wonders why she didn't walk away after hearing Nicole's account. But he told her it was just a row which had gotten out of control and she believed him. She also knew how the press could twist things. He would tell her the press were out to tear them apart. In November 2008, Mel and Stefan had their vow renewal in Egypt. The week before that, Phoenix had been staying with her grandmother and aunt in London. She had broken down several times and told them how much she hated her life. Andrea and Danielle were beside themselves. Andrea knew she had to handle this carefully. She told Mel years later how she knew he had an absolute hold over her and knew she wouldn't want to hear what she had to say. She was scared for Phoenix and Mel, so she didn't say anything on the trip. The day after their trip had ended, Mel flew to London with her family while Stefan went to LA. Her mother voiced her concerns. "He's bad news, Melanie." Mel sat there listening, completely emotionless. She had learned in her marriage to block out all her emotions, but a part of her knew her mother was right, but she was too scared to admit it. She promised her she would sort it. She thought about it all the way home to LA. She wondered if she should be worried for her child. She needed Stefan to hear what her mother had said. She was scared and knew it wouldn't go well. She would end up not seeing her mother again for 8 years. So guys, I'm going to leave it here for today. This is a really long story and I don't want to make this episode like 3 hours long because I hate when podcasts run so long. So I'm going to just keep it a little shorter. And this is a really great story and I hope you tune back in next time to listen. There's so many perfect examples in here of the patterns of abuse I've mentioned some already, and the isolation too, which is what we're going to get into next time. So thank you so much for listening this week, and I appreciate all the comments and ratings. Please, if you can, give me a rating. I would appreciate it so much on any platform that you're listening on. And I'm always here to reach out to ipvandmepodcast@gmail.com if you want to email. If you have any suggestions about the podcast, any stories you would like to hear, even if it's your own story you would like to tell me, you can either come on and join me on the podcast, or you can just tell me your story and I can add it into the podcast. I would love that. I love to tell, you know, real, regular, everyday women's stories, as well as, you know, famous stories that we all know of, or celebrities and whatever it is. And Instagram again is mandgogs. All the links are in the bio as usual. If you need help, thehotline.org is always there for you 24 hours a day. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful couple of weeks and I will see you next time.